Hi, everybody. You are listening to Universal Energy Radio. Today is Wednesday, March 4th, and this is Self-Mastery Through the Law of Attraction. I'm your host, Mary Jo Bull. Thank you so much for joining me here tonight. If you would like to speak to me directly, if you have a question or a situation you might want to talk through, I hope you'll give me a call here in the studio. The number is 718-664-9124. Just hit the number 1 on your phone and I'll get an indication that you'd like me to open up your mic. We don't have to reveal your identity. You don't have to give me your name. I would like to have a name. You can make it up if you like. But it is easier for me to connect with your energy and get more clear direction when I'm able to connect with you. Be as clear and concise as you possibly can with your question or situation so that we have maximum time together to get you to clarity and direction. As we go deeper into conversation over tonight's topic, it is my intention that this program is a safe space for conversations and discussions that lead to clarity and that listeners experience breakthroughs, epiphanies, and revelations. So let's get started with tonight's show. There's a lot of fear in the world right now, isn't there? The topic for tonight's show is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. A great quote by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. At a very scary time in world history, as we're all aware. So let's first talk about what exactly is fear. When we say I'm experiencing fear, what exactly does that mean? So fear is a state of insecurity. It can range anywhere from mild anxiety to absolute terror. From a physiological standpoint, fear is the emotion that we experience when we are looking at a situation that elicits insecurity from us. And the brain then reacts by releasing fight or flight hormones. And those hormones will course through the physical body for an extended period of time or for a short period of time, depending on the severity of the situation, but it really is dependent upon your particular perspective on the world. Something that might elicit terror in one person could be a mild annoyance in someone else. So when you're experiencing that sense of insecurity, it's because you are having thoughts, either conscious, subconscious, or unconscious thoughts that through the release of those hormones in the physical body connect with a correlating emotion, and those two combinations, the thoughts and the emotions, come together and they form a feeling. Fear is a feeling. Most of my life, I grew up believing that what I was feeling was validation, that what I was thinking was true. And that was inaccurate, which I learned many years later when I found or came across a teacher who helped me to understand why I had this pit in my stomach all the time. And I used to ask people if they experienced it too, but nobody could seem to understand what it was exactly I was talking about. And then one day I was introduced to this teacher who talked about feelings being an indicator of my connection to my source, to that which created me, to the spark of the divine that is me, and that my emotional state indicated how pure or open that connection to my creator was when I was thinking thoughts that weren't loving, weren't faith-filled, weren't in alignment with what my source is always flowing to me and through me, then I was going to feel this discomfort. I was going to feel fearful. And a lot of people live a great deal of their life in that fight or flight sense of being, to the extent that it can become not just a momentary experience or a mood that you might have for a day, become the way we operate in the world. It can become a temperament. And I'm sure we all know people who have that temperament, who experience life in that very insecure way. So the good news is that there's a way to move through your fear, understand the message, and move forward rather than staying stuck in the fear for extended periods of time. So as we just discussed, fear is a physiological state of being based on the release of a particular quality of hormones into the bloodstream in the body that gives rise to the sense of discomfort. So that's on the physical plane. On the spiritual plane, we experience fear when we are faced with a situation and we have forgotten who we are and where we came from and where we come from and who walks beside us at all times. The Course in Miracles says that fear is evidence that you've edged God out. This show, by the way, is not meant to be religious in nature. I'm not a proselytizer. I have come to understand that this aspect of being that we call God or Source or Allah or Jehovah or whatever name you're comfortable with, live in a material, mortal world that much of the world excludes the idea that we are spiritual in nature. It's rarely a consideration unless you're in a church or a synagogue or a mosque. Those places of worship are appropriate for, considered appropriate for communing with and considering the spiritual and divine nature of humanity. But we rarely tap into that in our day-to-day experience. Most of us are walking through this mortal world and we are having knee-jerk reactions to our experiences. Whether it's a difficult conversation with a colleague, a challenging health diagnosis, a lack of or shortage of money or prosperity, any number of situations or circumstances within our day-to-day life can give rise to this sense of fear and lack. And I think that there are elements in our society and in our world who, or that, I should say, that stir up that sense of insecurity and fear, because it's very distracting. And I think that there are elements that the mission is to keep us distracted, because when you're distracted, you're not fully in touch with, open to, aware of, connected with, relying on, having faith in that part of you which is spiritual in nature. But the fact is, everything comes from the world of spirit. Everything in this mortal plane starts out in the spiritual world. We talked about this last week, in last week's show. I talked about the painting done by Michelangelo called The Creation of Adam, and how a neurologist who was attending a international conference of neurologists in Italy in the mid-1990s made a very astute observation during a tour that was being given for these neurologists of the Vatican, and their attention was drawn to, called to, the beautiful painting on the ceiling that we call The Creation of Adam. And this neurologist looked up, you know, bent his head all the way back and looked up and made a verbal observation, like something along the lines of, wow, that piece that where God is sitting and reaching out to Adam, that looks, the outline of that structure looks like the outline of the human brain. And I posted the link to the article that I found about that particular story on the archived page from last week's show at the bottom. If you scroll down, there are comments, and I posted the link to that article there if you'd like to read more about that. That painting was Michelangelo's way of saying something very important and very profound without drawing the attention of and the ire of the Catholic Church, which at the time was all powerful in the world. There were artists and very spiritually tuned in people who were less circumspect with their observations, who were being executed and tortured by the Catholic Church because what they were offering was a threat to the church's absolute power and authority. The last thing you want as a powerful organization like the Catholic Church is for people to understand that they are sovereign beings. They have control of creating their world and their reality through their thoughts and their emotions. And that when they understand the truth of who they are, they don't need any of these other foundations or structures in order to have the freedom and the creative experience that we're all here to have. So Michelangelo was very wise in understanding that he had either received, I believe he received, a divine inspiration of how to depict the relationship between source energy, God, thought, and emotion to create in this world, to create the life that you desire. So as I said, everything starts with a thought. Even when that which we call God created this world, it all started with a thought. So I'm opening up my, I have a King James Bible here in my, on my desk, on my bookcase. Again, not proselytizing, not, this is not a religious show. I'm not trying to convert anybody to or away from anything, but I have come to understand personally that there's a tremendous amount of wisdom hidden in these wisdom teachings, whether it's the Bible or the Quran, or the, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the Jewish Bible, but there's a tremendous amount of wisdom in these very, very ancient teachings. And I believe that there are those who understood that and who's made it their mission to hide this wisdom in plain sight, also to disparage it so that most people would disregard the information that is available to us if we understand that it's there and how to interpret it. So if you do find that you're somewhat offended by my reference to these wisdom teachings, I would ask you to just during the program, just to sort of suspend those emotional reactions and just hear the words and let them sit. You can certainly decide for yourself at some point, yeah, no, this isn't for me, and that's fine. But I just think it's a shame for all this wonderful information to be available to us, but for the indoctrination and the conditioning we've received from others who received the same indoctrination and conditioning. So the first book of the canonical Bible and the Jewish Bible is the book of Genesis. And growing up in the Catholic Church, I've heard this scripture, these scriptures read many times, but it wasn't until I grew up and started studying with a metaphysical teacher that I really read them purposefully and critically. I'll give you an example. So in this first book, the first line in Genesis is, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty." I'll just stop right there. First it says God created the heavens and the earth. Okay. God created the heavens and the earth. The next line says the earth was formless. But if God created the earth, but now it's formless, what does that mean? When you create something, like when a sculptor has a lump of clay and they create a sculpture from it, there's a physical, tangible object right there for all to see and touch. So if it says God created the earth, and then it says that the earth was formless, what does that mean? So then you go on to read more, and it says, "Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." Water is a very spiritual element. Earth is a very grounded element. But whenever you hear about water, whenever there's a reference to water in wisdom teachings, it's always about emotion. And so I believe that what the scripture is saying is that there was emotion in God's creation. The feeling of what it would be like to have created this beautiful world, beautiful, tangible world that, you know, for all to experience. So this book goes on for several verses. And then at one point, It says, I probably should have marked this out when I started to read this, but I didn't. Anyway, I just think the beginning part of the scripture is the most important part of it, because I believe that what the scripture is saying, that God had a thought. He created earth in his mind first. Not he as a person like you and me, but this incredible energy, this source, this center of the universe, this Godhead had this vision of an earthly plane, and the thought came first, and then when the emotion was joined to the thought, there was this feeling of let there be light. I remember later on in the scripture, it talks about God created thus and such. God said, let there be light, and there was light. That, by the way, is a literal statement. Everything that exists in this physical world of form is made out of light. Take any object, whether it's a human hand or a book, and look at it deeply enough under a microscope, and what are you going to find? You're going to find packets of light. And that's all there is, are these packets and photons of light. And depending on the vibrational frequency of the photons, how quickly they're vibrating, because everything has a frequency, everything is moving. You'll see that again under a microscope. You'll see that those atoms, those molecules are moving, they're vibrating. And depending on the level or the frequency of their vibration, that's what determines the nature of the object. That's what makes bread, bread. It's what makes a book, a book. And it's what makes a human being, a human being. So we talked last week about the creation of Adam. We talked about it again today, the concept that everything begins with a thought. There's a corresponding emotion, and when you focus on it or you stay in vibrational alignment with it long enough, it will appear in your reality. Science, by the way, is proving this. Science has taken it from a wonderful concept to proof that this is in fact. So, when we look at creation from that perspective, we can see very clearly and deliberately the presence and the involvement of the spiritual plane in creation, right? It is, there's no creating reality without it. There's another scripture that says, he created everything, and nothing that was created was not created by him. So it's all there for us to pick and choose, to sift and sort, ultimately to decide what it is that we want to experience in our world. But being tuned into and aware of and working deliberately with this spiritual aspect of ourself is absolutely essential to creating a life that you love. So back to the question of what is fear? Well, again, Course in Miracles says that when fear is present, we are not considering or joining forces with the spiritual side of ourselves. And it takes practice. It takes awareness that that's even an option. And then it takes the decision to tap into that energy, tap into that reality, tap into that truth. Choose to believe that it's true. Choose to believe that those elements are available to you, and test it out. Test it out. You won't be disappointed. You'll be able to see that your focus and how you feel is what creates in your reality. So I opened the show with the idea that there is a lot of fear in the world right now. We're afraid that Mr. Trump will get reelected, and there are some who are afraid that he won't get reelected. There's some who are talking about coronavirus as a pandemic, and there are others who are saying, you know, it's basically the flu. There's just a lot of perspectives and viewpoints on all different topics in the world today. And when you feel a sense of fear coming up around any of it, understand that the reason that you feel fearful is because you've forgotten in the moment the truth of who you are and where you come from and the power that is innate in you. And if you can take a moment to stop rather than follow the scary, fearful thoughts down the rabbit hole, if you can become aware that you're feeling this feeling of fear and give yourself the gift of stopping for a minute, taking a few deep breaths to calm yourself down, get yourself into a place of peace, and then ask yourself, what was I just thinking about? What was I just focused on? And if you can identify what that is, you saw something on the news, or you read something on social media, or you overheard a conversation. If you can stop and identify what it was, and then you can ask yourself, do I want to believe that that's true? Because a belief is just a thought that you keep thinking. So you can change your beliefs anytime you want. Pretty radical idea. Some people say, no, that's not true. And they're welcome to live their life like that. But the fact is, it is true. You can change your beliefs anytime you want to. But first, you kind of have to know that you're carrying these beliefs, that you have these thought patterns existing in your consciousness. So you might ask, well, how do I become aware of what those thought patterns are that are in my consciousness that are causing me to feel badly? Well, I would advise that you need to make how you feel an absolute key to your experience of your day-to-day life. Make how you feel the most important thing, because your feeling is your first line of defense. How you feel will tell you you're thinking something that's not in harmony with who you are. Do you want to keep doing that? Now, you don't have to identify what you were, I mean, you can if you want to. You don't have to know what it was you were thinking in order to change it. Sometimes you can just say, you know what, today I don't choose to believe that. I'm going to look for reasons to feel good. There are other things that may come up in your consciousness that you might want to look at and ask yourself, where did that come from? You know, when I was, I've been meditating daily, or almost daily, now for a little over 3.5 years. And when I first started meditating, because I was afraid all the time, not all the time, but it was because I was going through some personal things that were causing me discomfort. And in the past, I would have just powered through. But that's what I did for so many years, which is why I was so uncomfortable and asking the question about, what is this? Why doesn't anybody else feel like this? So when I started to meditate about 3.5 years ago, I was experiencing some difficult conditions and circumstances in some of my relationships, in my finances, and in my career. And so my form of meditation, and everybody meditates in the way that's best for them. There is no right or wrong way to meditate. Just have to find what works for you, and don't have a preconceived idea of what meditation is. That's what tripped me up for a long time. I had this preconceived notion of what meditation was. And finally, one day when I just surrendered to it, it was like, oh, this is not at all what I thought it was going to be. But my form of meditation is to sit in a very dark and quiet room. I usually meditate in the morning. before it gets light. I have a little routine where I wake up at 5 or 5:15. I wash my face, brush my teeth, make my bed, and then I sit in my very comfortable overstuffed chair, and I sit cross-legged, or as my daughter used to say when she was little, crisscross applesauce, and I hold my hands, palms up on my knees, and I just follow my breath. And I breathe in, and I say to myself, breathing in, and then I breathe out, and I say, breathing out. And so I just kind of numb out my mind, if you will. I don't focus on anything that requires a lot of my attention. One teacher that I listen to pretty regularly, she likes to focus on the hum of an air conditioner because it's just kind of white noise, and she doesn't have to, you know, pay attention to it. It's not something that you get really invested in. For example, you know, she says, it's not like I go, well, I've heard better. So I just kind of find something very innocuous and unimportant to focus on. And so when I started meditating a few years ago, I was wanting to understand where some of these feelings and beliefs were coming from. And a lot of it came from my upbringing. My mother, of course, was my primary caregiver, and she grew up in a fundamentalist household. She was one of 14 children, and I think she was number 13, 12 or 13. So who knows what sort of conditioning and programming she received, but she was a pessimistic person. She didn't have a whole lot of faith. I think what she saw, the way she saw my grandmother worshiping, I think it scared her, because unlike Catholicism, which can be fairly quiet and not a whole lot of interaction between members of the congregation, fundamentalism can be much more active and noisy. And she took me once to one of the revivals, and that was enough for me. It scared the hell out of me. So I think that she just didn't really have her own center. And so I think she, like me, felt afraid and anxious most of the time. And so she would say things like, you know, well, you've all heard that expression, prepare for the worst, hope for the best, which those are two very different thought patterns, and your mind can't hold more than one thought at a time. So you kind of have to choose. And it turns out science tells us that we are wired to think more on the negative bias, probably as a survival mechanism from when we were here on this physical plane and we were in much more vulnerable circumstances. We had to have those heightened senses in order to survive and thrive. And so I heard from a very young age, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. If you're laughing at breakfast, you'll be crying by dinner time. It was just like life was a burden. Life was something to be borne. And it was through meditation, when I would just let myself kind of get clear, I would really kind of check in with my core, make sure that I was feeling very neutral. I wasn't feeling fearful or uncomfortable, just kind of calm and peaceful. I wouldn't say I was feeling good, like I wasn't feeling happy or optimistic or hopeful. I was just feeling very calm, very peaceful, very neutral. And those thoughts would sort of float to the surface. And I had taught myself not to follow them, not to react to them, not to have an emotional reaction to them, to just be in an observer stance, if you will. And so I would observe the thoughts coming up and I would say, oh, I see that. I see that. There's no judgment there. There's no discernment there. There's just recognition. I see that. And you know, it was interesting because when I would recognize that I saw, quote unquote, saw those thoughts, they would dissipate and they would not return. It was almost as though they had a will of their own. They just wanted to return back to the wholeness that is the truth of who we are. Those negative emotions, those negative thoughts are usually parts of ourselves we don't want to deal with, we don't want to think about, we don't want to address. And so they kind of get pushed off to the side. So they don't really go away. They're still there. And they will show themselves throughout our lifetime because ultimately they have their own consciousness and they want to be healed and returned to the whole as well. So if you are wanting to understand more deeply what your thought patterns are that might be holding you back or hindering your progress into creating a life that you love and desire, to pay attention to how you feel. Let your feelings get your attention throughout the day. And then ask yourself, what was I thinking about? What was I focused on? And is that something that I want to experience? Is that something that I want to experience in my reality? Because when you focus on something long enough, you're going to get that temperament that we talked about earlier in the show. You're going to set up a vibratory pattern, if you will, that's going to, what you put out, you attract. You know, we've all heard that expression. You get back what you put out in the world. You know, my mom, God rest her soul, she's been gone now for, almost 17 years. Her mantra, I remember hearing her say it over and over again when I was growing up. Her mantra was, I don't want to get old, I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to live with my children. And when my mother died, in her mind she was old, she was only 65, but in her mind that was old, and her body was starting to fail her. So she was old, she was sick, she had emphysema, she couldn't live on her own anymore. And she went to live with my sister for the last 3 years of her life. So everything she said she didn't want came true. Now, looking at her life now, looking back, I think that if she had known what I know now, she might have been able to recognize that she'd identified what she didn't want. So now, what is it that she did want? So I think what my mother wanted was, so let's take it piece by piece. So her first mantra was, I don't want to get old. So I think what she was really saying is, I want to feel vital and vibrant and alive. And I want to feel purposeful and involved with the world. I don't want to get sick. I want to have vibrant health. I want to feel capable and I want to be able to do the things that I want to do. And I want to be independent and I want to live life on my own terms. And then the last thing, I don't want to live with my children. I don't want to be reliant on someone else. You know, again, I want to be independent and I want to be myself in this world of form. So when you can identify the thoughts that you are having that don't make you feel good, then you can take a minute to say, okay, so what is it that I do want? And this is why feelings really are incredibly helpful. Oftentimes, if you ask pretty much any, you know, common man on the street, do you know what you want? Most people won't be able to answer that question, but they will be able to tell you what they don't want. Okay, so can you then pivot from what you don't want to the idea of what you do want? And some people can. Some people know very clearly what it is that they want. My daughter is one of those people. She is one of the most powerful, quick manifestors I've ever seen. Literally will go from soup to nuts to create what she wants in like 3 weeks' time. It's really quite astounding. But I think people like that are kind of few and far between because basically we're really clear about what we don't want, but you know, what exactly is it that we do want? Well, this is the beauty of feeling, okay? Because most of us know how we want to feel, right? Something just as basic as, I want to feel good. I want to feel happy. And when you say those things to yourself in your mind, when you say happy, good, even if it's just for a split nanosecond, you actually feel that feeling. I want to feel happy. temperature close your eyes, sit quietly, close your eyes, and just say the words, I want to feel happy. And for a minute, you'll feel it. It's almost as though the thought brings the emotion in. I want to feel happy. I want to feel good. I want to feel purposeful. I want to feel special. I want to feel hopeful and optimistic. I want to feel excited. I want to feel seen. I want to feel recognized. You can't go wrong with identifying how you want to feel. Oftentimes, once you've identified how you want to feel, then you'll start to see the picture of what that looks like kind of filling in for you. But you don't have to know exactly what it is that you want to manifest here in your physical experience in order to have that. But it, I mean, if you do know and you can think about it and sort of daydream and fantasize and imagine it, and it feels good to do so, then go for it. But you have to be in the right frame of mind. You have to be in the right frame of feeling. So oftentimes, you know, I remember, years ago, affirmations were, they were kind of the big deal. And people would say, you know, I'm doing affirmations, but nothing's happening. Well, most of us do our affirming from a place of lack. And all that does is amplify the feeling of lack. So, you know, when you're feeling in a place of lack, or you're coming from a place of lack, the idea of focusing on, you know, something that you do want, you can feel sort of that conflict, that inner conflict. Give yourself a break. Step away from that. If you can, take a nap, go for a walk, read a book, watch a funny movie, something to just sort of release that feeling of resistance. Or if you really, really want to turn it around in the moment, then go to your feeling place. Go to the idea of how do you want to feel right now? You know, right now you don't feel good. You don't need to go into a whole lot of detail. You know, you don't feel good. How do you want to feel? Well, I want to feel good. I want to feel happy. I want to feel hopeful. So I want to leave you with a story. So several years ago, gosh, probably 10 years ago now, my daughter was a soccer player. And I was experiencing, you know, single mom living in the affluent suburbs of Washington, D.C. I was facing some challenges in my finances, let's put it that way. So it was soccer season, and she was going to need new soccer cleats. So we were on our way to a soccer game, and I stopped at a local ATM to get some cash out so we could – actually, I believe her coach had purchased the soccer cleats, and we were going to reimburse her coach. So I go to the ATM and put in my PIN, selected the amount of money that I wanted out of the ATM machine. And typically when I'm asked, do I want a receipt, usually I say no. I don't want to be carrying around a lot of, you know, extra paper. But I was distracted that day, and I hit yes. And so the cash comes out, and the receipt comes out. And I glanced at the receipt to see how much was left in my account, and it was nowhere near what I was expecting that it should be. And so I started to just get that feeling of very strong, powerful anxiety. I was breathing shallowly. I was starting to feel a little bit nauseous. I was perspiring a little bit. But I had been learning a lot about the law of attraction and creation and the truth of who I was. So as I'm standing there, I'm taking some deep breaths. I wanted to get this under control before I got back in my car because I didn't want my daughter to pick up on the anxiety that I was feeling. So I get in the car, and as soon as I open the door to get in the car, she turns and looks at me, and she's like, what's the matter? And I said, nothing, let's go. And I get in, and I shut the door. She goes, Mom, before you even got in the car, I could feel the atmosphere in here change. What's going on? I said, nothing, it's fine. I'll fix it. It's not a big deal. Let's just go to the soccer game. So gave her the money. We get to the soccer game. She goes out to play her game. So I'm sitting up on the bleachers. and I'm still feeling insecure. And so I'm sitting in the bleachers, and it was a gorgeous day. And I thought to myself, okay, let's go back to basics. What would Oprah do? Because at the time, she was still on mainstream TV. You know, what would Oprah say? And so I'm starting to think about Oprah and how she would advise me. And I realized, look for reasons to feel good. I need to look for reasons to feel good. Now I had the voice in my head that was literally screaming at me, this is not the time to feel good. Where's all this money gone? that's what you need to be thinking. You can feel good once that's all taken care of. I was like, no, I want to feel good. I'm going to focus on reasons to feel good. And so I was looking at the weather, and it was a beautiful summer day and or spring day, and it was sunny, and there were beautiful white puffy clouds in the sky. A huge flock of geese flew overhead. I love geese. They're like my jam, my totem animal. And so I just was looking at reasons to feel good. And pretty soon I could feel the anxiety kind of melting away. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. This is great. So I stayed with that. It took me about 20, 25 minutes to get myself to a place where I felt calm and peaceful. But I finally got there. And I was like, you know what? It's a Saturday. Can't do anything about it today. So I'm not going to think about it again until Monday. All is well. We have everything that we need. You know, going to be fine. Still had some anxiety through the weekend, but for the most part, I was calm and peaceful. And, scripture says, faith the size of a mustard seed. If you've ever seen a mustard seed, they're very, very small. So I was encouraged by that. I was like, I at least have that much faith, the size of a mustard seed. I got to work on Monday. I called the bank. There had been some kind of a fraud situation going on. No problem. We're going to take care of it. We'll refund all your money. It'll be in your account tomorrow. And it was that Tuesday. It was done. So in retrospect, and I remember sitting there at the time thinking, okay, so basically what scripture tells us is remember the truth of who you are. Stay calm and peaceful. Do not let any situation steal your joy. Stay in joy because the solution is there and it's on its way to you before you even know there's a problem. There's a scripture in Isaiah that says, before they call, I will hear and I will respond. So I was a little uncomfortable for those couple of days, but I didn't let it steal my joy, so to speak. And the whole thing worked out just fine by itself. I didn't even have to do anything. So I would really strongly advise that if you want to be deliberate about changing your life, the first practical step you can take is to start paying attention to how you feel. Really, that is it's a simple step that you can take that will pay dividends in your life experience. Pay attention to how you feel. When you feel uncomfortable, give yourself, as soon as you can, a few minutes to stop, take some deep breaths so you return to a place where you're feeling calm and peaceful, and then ask yourself, what was I focused on? What was I thinking about? And identify what that is if it's necessary. Otherwise, just say, you know what? I was feeling insecure. How do I want to feel? It's a very simple step that you can take to change your life. And it will, I guarantee you, it will change your life. So we have no callers tonight. But I'm hoping that folks will maybe hear this recording in the future and maybe leave some questions in the comments on the archived show page. There's a lot of content in this program tonight to chew on and to think about. So for those who either are listening now or will listen in the future, thank you so much for taking some time off or time out of your evening to listen in. I'll be back here again next Wednesday, March 11th at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Hope you'll listen in then. I would really love to connect with you through email and through social media. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Mary Jo Bull. You can also connect with me through my website. I have a brand new website. I'm announcing it right now. It's www.logospraxis.com. That's L-O-G osprax.com. Logos is the Greek word for wisdom, and praxis is the Greek word for practice. So my website, the name of my website means where wisdom and practice converge. So logospraxis.com, click on the Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram icons, and you can click on join my community, send me an email. All my contact information is on my website. Thank you again for listening to Universal Energy Radio. If you like the show, please visit us at iTunes and rate the show. You can also leave a comment, as I said, on this show's page in the archive show section. We would love to get your feedback, or you can even leave a question, and I will cover it on our next show. Thanks again for listening in. Have a terrific night, everybody, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Good night.